You are listening to MSP 1337. I'm your host, Chris Johnson, and I'd like to thank you for joining us today. First and foremost, I'd like to thank our sponsor, MSP Ignite. MSP Ignite offers a peer group experience that is unique to managed service providers in the technology industry. If you are serious about implementing a model for success through sharing and collaboration of best practices, this is the best way to do it. Head on over to msp-ignite.com. to get more information. All right, on to the show. Welcome everybody to MSP 1337, episode 6, Shiny Object Syndrome. I am here today with Joshua Smith of Veronis and Charles Love of Showtech. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Yeah, my pleasure, Chris.
My pleasure as well.
I'm glad everybody is. My pleasure.
Everyone's pleasure.
Everybody has been. Everybody is okay. Wow. Well, we go off on a rabbit hole real quick. So I have asked both of you to be on the show today because there are you probably outside of my wife are the two people that know me the best. And when we talk about the term shiny object syndrome, there is probably not enough time in today's episode to really roast me on all of the mistakes I've made over the years as an MSP. On picking that shiny object. In some cases, I think I did make some good decisions, whether or not our business was ready for those great shiny objects to be implemented into our business. That was definitely not the case, I know, for some instances. But what I wanted to talk about today, Josh, you and I go back, oh man, it's like 13 years now, I think, almost 15 years. And you and I started a company after we realized that the MSP that we were working for wasn't maybe running the business the way we thought was the best way, which I think in some cases is the way every new MSP goes about it. But thinking back early on,
I think it's called hubris, Chris. I think it's the word you're looking for.
Ah. So what I was thinking about is if you think back to the early days, this is when managed services was relatively a novelty. What was like the big driver? And we know shiny object syndrome. What were some of the things that you think of that, whether they were bad decisions on my part or good decisions or not, what were the shiny objects that you think were either relevant to an MSP or were like, wow, that's shiny object. It is not ready for prime time.
Well, in preparation for this, I went ahead and printed out a couple bank statements from our early days just to hold you to task. I think the main focus was, especially being starting off as a smaller MSP, was trying to scale. So leverage the tools that would help us do more with less time, minimize the repetition, and kind of just help us wrap our arms around things that we had no clue about, such as, you know, finance, billing, you know, marketing. We kind of just needed all the help we could get to try to get to scale where we could start to, it's a kind of chicken and egg. You know, you need money, right? But you need people to do the services to make you the money. So, you know, how do you get people? How do you get money at the same time? And it's trying to leverage efficiencies. And that's usually through tools. And so I think we looked at a lot of stuff early on in terms of, I mean, I think probably ConnectWise is one of our first biggest purchases to try to help us wrangle operations in an efficient way.
Do you remember the PSA that I had shiny object syndrome before that ConnectWise later acquired? Was it Corelytics or something?
I think it was Corelytics. Yeah.
So even at the beginning, I had shiny object syndrome. I'm like, look, Josh, and for a fraction of what we can spend on these new big PSA vendors, we can get this and we can save money and be more efficient. And what did that end up doing for us? It just transitioned us to needing to get the PSA. And I, of course, had wasted all that time and energy.
I will say you do have a special ability to pick a small vendor that then almost immediately gets bought by a larger vendor. Right. And I don't remember you're into Astaro, which got picked up by Sophos. You're into Corelytics, got picked up by ConnectWise. So I almost think if you can somehow transition that to stock picks, I think we'll all be pretty rich.
All right. So that was kind of our beginning. So fast forward a few years and Charles, you came on, I think to some extent at the height of our growth when we were on Tangled Solutions, and you came in as our new director of operations to just really kick things in motion. What were the big things for you that you're like, you guys are crazy, Chris? Why the shiny objects? I mean, you just couldn't stop yourself.
So first thing we did is we looked at what you had, right? So I said, all right, I want to see a copy of every bill we have. And that was a bit of a challenge to find those bills, right? To find those contracts.
Well, you did notice that Josh had them printed out. Like, I think he actually started out with a paper copy. There was no digital version of it.
Well, but a lot of it, it's a little bit of that, right? But, you know, with paperless billing, sometimes things go into accounts you don't even know. Sometimes they're ACH'd. It just gets hard to find. The big challenge that we had was understanding the stack that was our foundation stack, right? So we took a lot of time to try and figure out, all right, so what do we have again? And just kind of build it out from there. I don't know if you remember, but I had this window behind me, and I had written all the vendors, and I had this little checkbox system, and we found a lot of things later on where we had multiple vendors doing kind of the same thing.
So some significant overlap. And as I look over your shoulder now, Charles, that you're there at ShowTech Solutions, I notice a folder system, not so unlike when you were with Untangled Solutions, that resembles much of probably where those files were going, correct?
Yeah, and definitely. And there's three others you can't even see, right? I do a little bit new school, I do a little bit of old school. It's very easy to pull a thing that says contracts that renew in January, things like that.
So you guys probably know where I'm going with this. I've spent the better part of my career as a managed service provider. I have been with the big enterprise MSPs, and then of course with, I won't say ours was small. We did big things with a handful of people. And That's right. What I think is really important for our listeners today is to talk about what I am calling shiny object syndrome, because there is a lot of polish being put on products right now that aren't necessarily ready for prime time. And I'll give you an example. I had a presentation given to me today by a vendor whose product is, I was impressed, rock solid, does pen testing well, does a lot of things well. But their areas that they focus on aren't areas that I have any clients. And this isn't a scenario where this is the first time this has happened. I would say over the last 6 to 8 weeks, the vendors that I have talked to, there's probably been about 10, they all have something and they've done a really good job of bringing it to market, but it's focused in a space that I don't have any clients. And they're really quick to tell me, we'll work with you to give you what you need. We'll work with you to give you the feature set that you need for your clients. And I'm thinking, at this point, I need products and services that already do what I need them to out of the gate. So we talked about PSA being critical, shiny object or not, had to get that in there. And second, talking about vendors where we have overlap. Charles, you're with a large MSP now, and I'm curious what your thoughts are on, as we look at the market today and talking about vendor overlap, what are you seeing as you run your MSP where you're like, we've already got that, we don't need another one of those? Where are you seeing the need to look for something to fill a gap versus something that you already have and it's just replacing the same thing?
So, I mean, it kind of boils down to your internal needs analysis, right? As MSPs, we always tell the customers, here's all the things you need. We're going to sell you all these awesome things, make you super secure. But we don't really take the time to go, so what should I be doing? You know, what areas do I need to be focusing on? There's the idea of, if we build it, they will come, mm-hmm. right? So if I sign up for this shiny object because I saw them at a show, right? They promise me leads, they promise me enablement, all these cool things. And then if I do nothing with it because tickets, phone calls, life, kids, COVID, whatever, if I don't have the second half of that, it's going to fail, right? So I have to acquire that thing, that shiny object, that technology stack. But there's a whole other piece that nobody talks about, which is planning to tell the world that we have this cool new thing.
Right.
Right. That's a big gap that a lot of people forget. They just pay for a software. Next thing you know, it's time for renewal. It's been a year later and you're like, oh man, I didn't tell anybody we had this.
So Josh, you're, well, that just described me to the nth degree. Like, hey, I've got this cool product and tool and I'm going to use it when I'm ready to use it. I don't care if you need it or not. So Josh, I was thinking as Charles was talking, you're now with a vendor that predominantly has catered to the enterprise space. And I don't want to make this about, you know, vendor product services, but you've got a unique view right now that says, I was an MSP. Now I'm on the enterprise side of things. I'm a vendor. How does your sort of perspective look as we just heard from Charles?
I tend to break it down into two different categories. I think there's internal facing solutions and then there's customer facing solutions. I think that when it comes to internal facing solutions, I think you want to find the nail before you go out and buy the hammer, right? And then when it's customer facing solutions, I think you get involved with that vendor in that solution. And then you kind of pre-sell it or see if you can pre-sell it to some existing customers, because you might think that there's a need. The vendor's going to tell you there's a need.
Right.
But really, it's all about, does the customer think there's a need? So I think if you can get some of your kind of VIP customers and you kind of tell them, like, we're looking at the solution. We want to see, you know, would you pay X dollars for these benefits? And if they're all on board, great. If they're kind of, you know, iffy, why not get together on a three-way call with one of your trusted customers and this vendor and have the vendor sell it to your customer. And if they can, then great. Then, you know, you've already somewhat already paid for that solution. I think it's kind of like a beta test in a way of if you can get that sold, because the one thing I've learned is that, you know, I feel like looking back on our early days, we were doing way too much of the legwork. But what I see now from the more successful partners and resellers is they leverage the vendor like up to here to get the vendor to do a lot of the work. Because again, when you're an MSP, when you're a reseller, your solution stack is probably, I mean, Charles, I don't even know how many vendors you guys are using right now, but it gets up to, you know, a dozen plus, right? And it's really hard for you to be a subject matter expert on every single one of those vendors. So what you do is you manage the relationship and you have those vendors be experts on their own solution and help you to do those quarterly business reviews for that solution or to troubleshoot or install or do all those other things, because most of them have professional services. You can resell that. So, you know, why should you have to become the expert on something, you know, when you've got so many other things to take care of? So I think leveraging the vendor a lot, doing QBRs with your vendor, right, to make sure that you are taking advantage of every aspect of these solutions that you've bought either for yourself or you're buying for your customers. So that's kind of the perspective I get.
You're totally killing the whole show. Like, you literally jumped ahead. Like, I had this in my head that this, I should have known better. I should have known that Josh is going to run with what's probably something that we've talked about before, even if we haven't out loud. So where I wanted to go next, which is right along those lines, and I know, Charles, I know that you're known in the industry as the guy that will, if you're a vendor and you're not ready for prime time and you've sold me on something, you're going to get a lot of quality time with Charles to get that fixed. And it will be some aggressive get it done, because as an MSP, and rightly so, we don't have time for it, right? You don't have time for being the MSP who's fixing vendor problems, because you know as much or more than the person you're working with on the vendor side. So where I wanted to go with this next, I think, is really hurting MSPs right now, or is a challenge if it's not hurting them. And that's, if we think about what we charge as an MSP for what I would consider to be the products and services and time that help our clients be more efficient, more productive, to make sure the lights are on, to make sure that they can open that PDF, to make sure they can print, all those things that involve their ability to satisfy their clients' needs, right? It has never been about, don't worry, we've been putting money aside for you. In the event you get ransomware, we've got you covered, right? That's not what we've been doing. And there's been some assumptions had that says, because you're my MSP, you're also my security vendor. So what I wanted to do as sort of the segue here is, if I think about how much you charge on average per user, it's somewhere between, I'll just say on the low end, there might be people still charging sub $100 maybe. But on the high end, we're probably not much higher than 175 all in per user. and correct me if I'm wrong, Charles, but that seems to be about somewhere in there. There's plenty of room to charge somebody for managed services that really doesn't include security offerings. Is that fair?
For sure.
So now we're transitioning into a world where we're looking at products like Huntress or Rocket Cyber or Vade or Cyberfish, you name it. And they may vary in what they offer from a laser scalpel level, almost surgically inserted into your stack type of a product or service, or it's a suite of products and tools that you can buy in an a la carte or all-inclusive stack. And so, okay, now you're looking at how do I segue to this new cost model that I have to pass along, and I'm already at that 125, 150, 175. What's palatable for me to ingest because I need to improve my security posture? And that's not even get into what I would potentially want to take to my clients to be billable. But what, where do we have to turn as we move this sort of needle forward? Because I think everybody is now going to incur more cost.
For sure. There's that sweet spot stack that you want everybody to have, that foundational stack. But with all the cool tools out there, it's like, oh, I really wish everybody had A and then B, then C. Next thing you know, all the margin is gone. Right? They have the best system in the world, but I make no money on it.
Right.
Right. So there's gotta be a place where you kind of go, all right, this is our foundation stack, but this is the advanced stack. And trying to find that sweet spot for some people is very hard.
Are we going back to the gold, silver, bronze from the early days?
Not so much, but you know, if you have a stack of 15 products and your costs on those could equate to $50, like right out the gate. So it's just a matter of figuring out what we wanna offer as a base and then what we wanna offer as an add-on.
And I think to add to that, and Josh, being in the enterprise space now, if I think about buying products and services in the MSP channel space, we're used to going, all right, it's a dollar or it's 80 cents per seat per month more. And when you think about enterprise products, it's like, oh, for all in, that's going to be $50,000 per year. It's a, or higher, right? I'm sorry. This is a really small enterprise I was using as an example, or, or an SMB. Okay. But my point was, regardless of what the dollar cost is, you're not giving me pricing based on a per user or a per device. It's more like per site or per entity. And we're used to a business model where from the MSP side, where it's per user per seat kind of model. And we're struggling because most of the security vendors that are now suddenly popular in the MSP space, they're not used to selling in that seat model where we're thinking about how do I get this down to, you know, 83 cents a user. And they're like, well, we can get down to that price, but you're going to have to commit to 500, 1000, 1500 seats. And suddenly you're going, but I only have 1,000 users and I got to get all of them to be on board with this new security stack that I'm going to, not for lack of trying, but maybe require them to have if they're going to stay on as a client. So what I've been struggling with, and it's almost every conversation I have with an MSP is what you're looking at, the shiny object that's solving a problem that you have that you are aware of and a product that you currently have that doesn't meet those needs. Or are you looking at what we used to call the shiny object that I was always looking at, like, how can I make this better to make more money? And it's solving a problem that I didn't know I have.
Well, yeah, like I said, you know, earlier for internal solutions, nail and hammer, right? Ideally, you should be finding nails and then going and getting the appropriate hammer. Whereas I think the shiny object, you see a nice big shiny hammer and you're like, I'm sure there's some nails around here somewhere that I can tap down. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the issue. And when it comes to the pricing issue, I think those are the differences you're going to see between maybe born in the channel vendors and maybe more corporate enterprise vendors that now think, hey, that channel seems like a really cool additional revenue model, right? So they're trying to kind of bolt on the channel mentality of working with MSPs, getting that stuff down to that, you know, per seat per month versus just starting out that way.
And assuming that we can get that pricing right, let's assume we can make everybody happy here. The other thing that has concerned me for a while now is we got resource capacity as a big challenge for MSPs, right? So whether it's going to add value and they really need to implement and put it into their organization or not, there's a who's going to be responsible for this once the contract gets signed and now you involve the vendor. I mean, Josh, going back to what you said earlier, involve the vendor, right? How far are the vendors willing to go? So as you're evaluating the vendor, how much lift is on me, the MSP, versus you, the vendor? So that obviously should factor into this. Second one that comes to mind is, assuming we've got the dollars figured out, is this actually important enough to do right now versus what are the other areas that I need to be improving with my customer already? And Charles, maybe you can put some words to that, because I know we've talked about this before. When we look at inefficiencies in an MSP or with their clients, sometimes security is a byproduct of doing the efficiency things first.
For sure. And there's a lot of awesome software out there, but if I can't get the data aggregated back to me in a way that works like everything else, it's a problem. Will it integrate into the PSA? I was on a panel at IT Nation this year with LionGuard. That's a huge part. Can I pull data and have historical? Can I report back what's going on? If the solution in question doesn't do these things, doesn't report into, to a LionGuard or an IT Glue or whatever you're using, then it's a siloed thing and it's its own little animal. And last thing I have time to do is go log into that third party system to go see what it's doing. Right. I kind of need everything spoon fed to me in one dashboard.
I think that's a big problem. SMB,
essentially MSPs, kind of like a unifying SIM for all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. We have a core of like 15 vendors, right? And of the 15 vendors, I want to say about 13 of them push data directly into my main platform. Oh, wow. And the other two currently looking at maybe changing them up.
I think that's I used to say this before, Josh and Charles, maybe you've heard me say this before. If it doesn't integrate with my PSA, I don't want it. Mm-hmm. And I would do that at vendor. I'd do that at shows. So talk to me about how it integrates with my PSA. And they go, well, we've got this email integration. I'm like, that's not integration. Yeah. And I'm not saying that to downplay a vendor or diminish the value that they may bring. And there may be those exceptions where I'm saying, I've got to use this anyway. But the reason why it's like you just keep adding where I want to go with this. It's kind of cool. I should have done this much sooner in the series. But we're getting to the heart of evaluating products and services to boost our security stack, right? Because if you can't take actionable steps based on the data being fed to you in real time, is that product putting you in a position of risk and liability?
Yeah, I think we need to start, when MSPs are looking at vendors and you start looking at, do they have some sort of SOAR integration? Do they have some sort of, bi-directional API? Depending on what the solution is, if it's going to ingest things, is it very open to ingesting? Can it work with syslog? Can it work with just different kind of data streams? And can it respond to those things? Can it make calls out? Can we automate stuff, right? Because the goal here isn't to give ourselves more work to do. The goal is to leverage the past, 10 plus years of the MSP space to learn from and build upon those things we used to do manually and start to automate the boring stuff so we can focus on the things that drive revenue, like relationships, like sales, like just getting out there and actually having some human contact instead of being locked away in the basement, trying to go through and fix bad installs or whatever else we're doing today.
So
Charles, add a cherry on what he just said. So one of the things that I have kind of worked on over the last couple of years is my vendor kind of cheat sheet. And I'm always adding to it. And just to give you an example, does the vendor have a status page? That is huge.
Yeah.
Right. Because then I can tie other systems to pull data from that status page. Does the vendor offer chat support? Can I physically pick up a phone and talk to somebody? Right. The amount of vendors where that's a no is concerning, but it is what it is. You know, and I go through all these various things. Is it long-term contracts? Is it month to month? You know, all these crazy metrics.
Do they have an NFR?
Well, that's a part of it, right? Because if I need to be able to run it in-house, I don't necessarily need the NFR, but I need to be able to just run it. There's not a solution out there that we don't run internally.
Right.
Right. But can you go back to your team and say, hey, here's my 32 checklist on this vendor I'm looking at, and then make an educated guess? No, they don't have a status page. No, they don't have somebody to call.
They don't integrate with my PSA.
Yeah. So that's a no.
So would you also add to that, Charles, like a named account manager at that vendor?
That's another one of my questions. Do I have a point of contact, you know, or an account manager?
A champion, if you will.
Yeah. Like,
you know, that kind of goes back to how much lift is the vendor going to do for me, right? So if and I can think about, especially in my time working with Datto and having, you know, Kevin, like Kevin was like, it didn't matter, you know, morning, noon or night, if we send him an email, he'd let us know, I'm on it, I'll take care of it. I remember I had one of my kids tears because his brother got one of my Datto backpacks. And I just emailed Kevin and I'm like, look, I don't know if you got one of these, I'll pay for it. I said, but I've got one kid that's feeling like he got left out. And don't get me wrong, he had just as nice of a backpack that was from a different vendor. In fact, they were the same bag, just with different logo. And so Kevin's like, I'll see what I can do. And I think it was maybe a week. And in the mail, I got that backpack. And along with that backpack was a bunch of other swag that my kids were just thrilled to the moon. That was way above and beyond. And I'm not saying that every vendor has to do that, but I mean, there are some things that make you become almost a vendor loyalist when they start showing you that they care about you outside of just their products and services. And I think that's important in that checklist, you know, do they care about me?
So Kev, like, we'll just use Kevin because he's awesome, but
he's from South Park, by the way.
Yeah. He's a good point. No matter what my question was at that vendor, I could just call Kevin and he would find the answer.
Right.
Right. And that's even affected how we do things in our business, because when we, like, let's say we onboard a new customer, I used to say, well, if it's an accounting issue, go to this person. If it's a billing issue, go to this person. If you want to know status of a ticket, go to this person.
Sure.
And I've essentially said, here's an address for Kevin, so to speak. Funnel all your stuff to this person, this entity. And no matter who it is, you're going to have somebody who cares about you.
Which, by the way, he doesn't even work for named vendor. He just used to, you know, like, there's some of that too, right? Like, I'll just ask so-and-so. They'll have the answer for me. Yeah.
So is the answer maybe for MSPs just to create a shared mailbox named Kevin? And just like, if anyone has a problem, they just email this Kevin guy and it just goes to all these different people and they can respond. But now everyone will have their own Kevin.
Replace shared mailbox with Q and I'm with you.
It's funny. I have the ticketing system that we use is kind of along those lines, where it's got, you assign tickets, you can assign a ticket to a team. So based on category, those teams are seeing those tickets. You don't have to assign to individual. It kind of takes some of that legwork out. Well, not to go off on a tangent too far. So for those of you that don't know, I run the secure outcomes for MSP Ignite, and we're heavily focused on security and improving the security posture for an MSP. So I have my agenda, and that is to make you the most secure MSP that you can be. And on this call today, I've got Joshua Smith, who's with a vendor, which obviously sets its own criteria for what the goals would be, that's different from me. And then you've got Charles, who is an MSP. And the reason why I want to throw that out there is each of us has a different reason for why we do what we do, right? And at the end of the day, we're all in this space to sort of serve the MSP community. And so I think what's important is that in my role, I want you to be as secure as possible. And at some point that may be at conflict with you doing business. So the reason I have both Josh and Charles on here, besides picking on me, is to give the perspective that it isn't about how secure you are. It's about being secure without putting your business at risk of not being able to operate. So Charles, one last tip for security minded folks, if you could throw one piece of advice, and then I'll ask the same of Josh.
The best thing is, are you running what you sell? Because if you're not running what you sell, are you really the expert on it, or is it just something in a line card?
If you're drinking your own champagne.
Yep.
And along those lines, Charles, do you believe that if that's the focus of an MSP, they will be more inclined to make better decisions about new products they want to put in their stack?
Absolutely. And, you know, just have your stack and live by it. Yes, there are four different 2FA vendors out there, right? Stick with one. Make your team know one tool really, really, really well, and not five tools kind of okay.
And Charles, where can people find you at?
So you can hit me up on Twitter, Charles J. Love on Twitter. It's probably the easiest one, or on LinkedIn.
Got it. Josh, what's one tip that you would leave the MSP listeners with?
I would say take a step back, take more of a holistic approach, and say, what are the issues that I'm seeing in cybersecurity? You know, whether it's, whaling, spear phishing, that kind of stuff, whether it's, account takeovers, if you're moving into Office 365, is it, weak passwords? Is it, essentially brute forcing? Whatever that you're seeing in your ecosystem, right, I think should be what is prioritized to solve. And to Charles' point, if you can solve it with your current vendor, even if you can't solve it like 100% the perfect way, I think good enough in your current ecosystem so you don't have to stretch yourself too thin, I think is better than trying to come up with 100 different point systems.
Sure.
I'd rather have half that work 80% because I think that'll improve operational efficiency and the likelihood that you won't pull a Chris Johnson. And 1 year later, when renewal comes up, you're like, did we ever roll that out? So that's my thing is take a step back, look at it from like a systems approach to say, we're here to solve problems. Going back to my, hammer nail analogy, let's find and prioritize our nails before we start, implementing hammers.
So the short version is whether the product does the job 80% effective or 70% effective or whatever that percentage is, as the MSP, I should be using it as 100% as much as I can, because that's better than having a product that is, catching it 99.99% of the time, but we're only effectively using it 15% of the time.
Yeah, exactly. You're only going to be able to catch fish once you throw the net. So I think efficiency and reliability and actually, so efficacy, but also how much you use it, right? I think is key, because we see all these, especially in the security space, all these little point systems coming out, and we're like, we can do this one very thing and we crush it. Like, that's great, but I've got umpteen other problems. Now I'm gonna have to go out and find all these other point solutions. I think the more we can squeeze it down, the less consoles we have to log into.
Yeah.
The more we can integrate, the more we can streamline. I think that trumps 99.99%. Success rate. I can settle for a little less, but the fact that we're going to roll it out, we're going to be able to actually look at the alerts and process them rather than just every 30 days flush our alerts and start fresh, right? That's not going to do anyone any good, because things are going to slip through the cracks, because no solution is 100% efficient, or no solution is 100% every time. It doesn't hit the target every time.
Well, that's like the scoring system too. The 7.5 out of 10 or 9 out of 10 doesn't necessarily equate to one product being better than the other. It's all at the end of the day going to come down to the people you have in your organization responsible for, acting on the information coming out of those products. All right, Josh, where can people find you?
Joshua M. Smith on Twitter and Josh M. Smith on LinkedIn. Someone beat me to my full name on LinkedIn.
Well, with a unique name like Josh Smith, I could see how that might happen.
Got to throw that M in there every time.
Well, guys, I really appreciate you being on this episode of MSP 1337. Have a happy Thanksgiving. And with that, we're out.